Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ken English, and you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is a special edition of Liquid Lounge, a program that I do on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be talking about a special topic, something that happens to a lot of people every year, but if so it happens to you, you really don't think about it, or your family. And I'm talking about paralysis. Did you know that on average, 10,000 people a year have some form of paralysis? Some accident contributes to that. Life has changed in the blink of an eye. According to the Cure Paralysis Now organization, 61% of spinal cord injury victims are between the ages of 16 and 30. Mostly it's because it's sports related, diving being the number one activity for a problem. But there's other situations that take place. One of them happened to my family. I'm joined today by my sister, Judy Clark. Judy, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing great.
That's good. The purpose of our conversation today is really to share some information with other people. You had a traumatic experience. I'm going to let you tell the story that's there. But what we're really trying to focus on is how we could reach out on this format, which is talk radio on the Internet, and perhaps help somebody who's had a problem. So why don't you just introduce yourself, say hello, and tell people a little of your story.
Okay, it kind of be in brief. I'm 54 years old. 8 years ago, I had a car accident, donated blood at the hospital in New Jersey, and about 10 minutes away from the hospital, fainted at the wheel and hit a guardrail. Between the guardrail and the airbag, broke my neck, so I have a spinal cord injury of a C6, 7 level. My arms move, but my hands are paralyzed, and from the chest down, I'm paralyzed.
So that sums it up pretty nicely. We also have on the call, Jason, is that you?
Yes.
Jason Clark is Judy's son, and your perspective on this, we just started up talking a little bit about from the family side, you know, when your mother was hurt in the accident, where were you? How did you find out about it?
I was actually... I was leaving Sally Dickinson University, which is where I was going for my undergrad. I was leaving campus, which was actually right next to, about 5 minutes away from where the hospital was. So I got a call from my sister, Michelle, and she let me know that my mom was in a car accident. And so I went over to the hospital as soon as I heard.
Judy, what do you remember first after the accident?
Nothing. I was... again, I fainted at the wheel, so 2 weeks I was in a coma, and then for a month I was in the intensive care until I went to rehab. I just remember when I did finally come to after probably the 2 or 3 weeks when I was starting to get some conscious recollection of what was going on, that they told me that I was never going to walk again, and my fingers were never going to move again. I guess I felt a little more paralyzed than the 80% that was already paralyzed. It was hard to conceive the idea that in the rest of my life I'd never be able to walk or use my fingers, the digits, again. But
I really couldn't think
of much.
I can only imagine how traumatic it is. As you're starting to come back to reality, so to speak, as it's now changed, who helps? Who is the first people? Who are the caregivers? Who comforts the victim, we'll call you at this point?
Your family and your loved ones. Doctors did the medical part, but how do you emotionally handle that? They certainly don't have the time, and they're only handling the blood pressure and all the other medical things that have to be done. It was the family and your special people that came to visit you, at least for those 2 or 3 months, while you're trying to recover, you know, from that accident.
Jason, what did you do during that period of time? How did you cope with it?
It was definitely, you know, a shock to everyone in the family, and what transpired because of the accident, I mean, really changed all of our lives. But, you know, it was definitely just making sure that She had the best care that she had, and did everything that we could do when she was in the rehab facility and in the hospital. We just we would go and visit and just do everything we could to try and make her as comfortable as she could be. But there were a lot of things that that they needed to do as far as the rehabilitation to get her back to a point where she could finally leave the rehab facility.
When you got into that motion of, okay, what do you do now when she's coming out of the hospital, where did you turn? I know that there's an organization we're going to talk about a little bit, is the Medical Needs Foundation. Where did they come from?
They were actually a local charity from the town that we were all living in at the point, Mountain Lakes, and before they even arrived, it was just we would get advice from, the people at Kessler, which is the rehab facility that she was a part of, and we had whole health aides to help her with her personal care, but there was a lot of care that myself and Michelle, my sister, had to take on, to help her, try and live as normal of life as possible at that point. But we really weren't sure what exactly we were doing. It was just day to day. We would, everything was new for us. So it was definitely definitely a difficult time for us all to kind of learn all the things that needed to be done as far as transfers and personal care for her.
Judy, what's the procedure for somebody that's paralyzed as significantly as you are in the hospital? Is there a sequence that the doctors go through over a period of time, or does it all depend upon the patient themselves?
What do you think, Ken? Are you asking
first? Do they start? Do they work on rehabilitation? What did they do for you, or how did
the
they?
The hospital had to stabilize me because I couldn't even sit up. Because my blood pressure, I feel like I was going to faint. And, again, to regulate the blood pressure and to medicate me, I was pretty severely medicated in the beginning, I guess, because there was a lot of trauma going on inside, for recovery. So there wasn't much except medically that they could do. There was no rehab at all, rehabilitation in the hospital, because that was all intensive care because I couldn't go into a regular room. And then when I went to Kessler facility, that was mainly for people with brain traumas and spinal cord injuries, main and hip replacements and major kind of rehabilitation after surgery and everything. I had a neck infusion, so I had to plate my neck. So they had to be real, real careful how they moved me and everything. So twice a day they would do a little gradual rehabilitation as much as my body could handle and as much as I could do without being so fatigued because I did get very, very tired.
Where is Kessler?
That's in West Orange, New Jersey. That's even where Christopher Reeves went, because that was at the best facility, I think, in the United States for somebody with a spinal cord injury. Yeah, out of all the places that they looked into, that's where he did rehabilitation, when he got hurt.
Now, from that injury of Christopher Reeves, they started up the Reeve Foundation, a website being paralysis.org, they obviously, until he had his accident, they were pretty oblivious, like most people are, to the seriousness of paralysis, weren't they?
Right, yes. And now they even have in Summit, New Jersey, an actual facility where people with spinal cord injuries or anybody can actually visit and learn more information.
Well, in the Miami area, there's the project to cure paralysis. The Miami Project is what it's officially known as. And it came off of a football injury to one of the Dolphin players' sons, Nick Bonacani. His son, Mark, was paralyzed in just a freak bad tackle. And so, fortunately, in the situation that some of the people can really step forward and reach out and help. Jason, what have you been doing with the medical needs over the last couple of years? I know that they step forward, they help, and then they move on. I mean, they don't stay with the same people because there's somebody new every year. What is the Medical Needs Foundation all about?
Well, and if I could just take a step back, how the foundation actually came about, and they'd heard about the accident and actually came and knocked on the door one day, and spoke to my mother and myself, my sister, and said, what are the what are your medical needs and what are the things that aren't being covered by insurance that we can assist with. So what the charity does is they help families and individuals with extreme medical costs that aren't covered by insurance. And when they came to our door, I had never heard of them. I don't think anyone in my family had either. But what they did was really a godsend because they helped financially. They helped to create a network of people that would, come over and assist as on an as-needed basis and to help out with different things. And the charity organization is really, I think, was definitely a conduit to help my mother to live as successfully as she is now and living in Florida. But again, I mean, what they do is they help families out and they have a certain number of beneficiaries each year who they assist with various medical costs and, home health care and basically any medical needs that they have that aren't covered by insurance.
Well, Judy, what are some of the things that you encountered that you really have had to deal with from the equipment and things like that? I know you've given a little bit of thought to a couple of topics. Nothing in depth right now, just some things to put out on the table, so to speak, so when we do this program again, we can develop a couple things.
Okay. Well, you mean as far as overall, like the general things about my house and how long it's
been? How did you come out of it to begin with? First things first, I suppose. When you had a house, the house had to be retrofitted.
Oh, the renovation, so it took about 3 months. I mean, they were actually working on it when I was in rehab. So when I actually even came out of my house, thank God it was a raised ranch. So all the living area, I didn't have to move from my house that I was living in. Just they had to widen the bathroom, widen all the doors, put in a driveway. I couldn't do any of that stuff because I wasn't driving. Eventually, I was hoping I was going to be able to, which I am now. But they had to do all that stuff. I mean, I had to get sponge baths and everything for the first month or so because my bathroom wasn't even ready. So it was a lot of construction going on, and it was very hard for me and really hard for my family that was living there. So that was one of the main things with all the construction that had to go on. And the things to just accommodate me. I didn't have a power wheelchair, and with your fingers not moving, that was kind of hard. It took almost 3 months to get my power permobile that actually stands me up, which is great for the circulation. And, of course, for any pressure sores, so that, it's hard to do weight shifts when you can't move most of your body. So that I finally did get. But I had hardwood floors, and that was great. I didn't have to rip up carpeting so that I could push myself in a manual chair. Might have taken me 10 minutes to get down the hallway, but I was able to, manage to do that. So the things in the house, and then I did try to get to rehabilitation, and when you don't drive, it's kind of hard to find transportation to get you to a facility, and people through my church actually learned how to do a transfer on a transfer board to get me out of my manual chair and then fold up the manual chair and take me to the rehab. So a 45-minute trip actually took an hour and a half just to get me there, for them to transfer me and get me up. The people through the church, of the kindness of their hearts, they certainly did that for 3 months until I was able to go for driving lessons, and it actually took about a year until I learned to drive and could get a modified van. I could go on and on about the helpers that I needed to get and how it is to interview the people and try to keep them with you and try to stay pleasant even when you're not feeling good. To make people want to come and help you get up in the morning and get dressed and come back at night and help you with the shower and get back into bed. It was about a year and a half, and then I was able to get a job, and I sought that on my own and worked at the job for 3 years until I moved down to Florida. I've been on the present job for 2 years.
Well, the accident happened in New Jersey. You now live in the Port Orange area of Florida. Certainly some good things in the physical, the geography of the move, the flat land and better weather, that's been good. But there's difficulty in finding support staff and help, isn't there?
Oh, always. Because, I don't need now the people that often. I mean, that much time, it's only for an hour in the morning and pretty much an hour at night, and for people to come out. And this is all I pay for, out of my pocket. So I don't pay an awful lot through an agency that would. And most people need assistance, probably 2 or 3 or 4 hours each session. And I'm glad to say I'm feeling well enough that I don't. I need just to get, so to speak, jump started in the morning, get up, get dressed, and do some leg exercises for the person, get me into my chair, and then I'm able to function all day until the nighttime, until the person comes back to get me in bed.
So you mentioned the other day that in the church that you go to, there was a young person that just suffered some kind of injury. You see that a lot, don't you?
Well, occasionally, and it's an unfortunate thing. This young boy was only, I think, 17, and had an accident on a raft in the, I guess, behind a boat, and they were pulling him, and somebody fell off the boat, and they hit the wave, and he has a brain trauma. And in his particular case, I don't know if he'll ever get any better, so he'll be totally confined to that chair. And I think he's only 18 now, 18 or 19, young.
Pretty devastating when that happens. Just when you look online at some of the different things, I know that there was a young wrestler in New Jersey that you had some contact with, a state champion wrestler, just wrong pin move and broke his neck. It doesn't, in football, people think of the violence of the sports, but you know, Jason, you played a lot of sports, and you recognize that with all the people that are playing, there's not very many severe injuries like this. It just happens to be the freak thing, diving into a swimming pool or a lake that's too shallow, things like that. What advice would you have, Jason, for family members? How do you deal with it? I mean, certainly there's got to be a feeling of I don't want to, you know, even think about it. To the other side of, oh my God, you know, what am I going to do?
It definitely is overwhelming, and I think for everyone in my family, I think they would all agree with that. I think it's just taking everything a day at a time and finding out what things you're comfortable with, but also what is the most important thing for, you know, the person that had the injury and how you can best support them. But I really think the key is taking it a day at a time, because there were so many things that she needed at first, and we really didn't know, you know, what to do. It was just, you know, we just had to take it a day at a time. I mean, because there were a lot of things that we needed to learn as far as ourselves doing transfers and her personal care. And when she first got out of the rehab, she had a trach in her throat, so we had to be very sensitive to that. And, you know, there were a lot of things that could have gone wrong that didn't. So I think we're very lucky. But I also think that, you know, my mother's personal strength and her drive and spirit helped her through that, but also helped to make it a lot easier for us. And, you know, I really feel blessed that, number one, she's as independent as she is, and number two, that, you know, that she's still as positive and as driven to really, you know, live an independent life and to not only help herself but help others, and with her, you know, going to the gym and helping to kind of build up her strength and stamina and you know, trying to do as many things as she can to improve her current state. In the hopes that, you know, in the near future, and with all the research that's being done and the testing by the Miami Project and the other organizations out there, that one day she would be able to walk, and if not in her lifetime, someone in her level of injury will eventually, you know, be able to regain some of the movement and ultimately, you know, be able to function more so than being refined to a wheelchair.
Well, it appears that stem cell research is the path that scientists are going down, and that becomes a very controversial issue, isn't it?
Yeah. With the stem cell research, you know, they're not getting any more government funding, and there's a lot of private funding going on. There's a lot of research, but I really think, and you touched on this before, that the whole Christopher Reeves accident, and then the Nick Bonacani accident has really brought that more to a public forum, and really has gotten a lot more publicity for people with injuries. And there, I don't know the number, but I know it's very high as far as people living in wheelchairs and living in various states of paralysis.
Well, according to the organization called Cure Paralysis Now, which is an advocacy group,
that actually started on April 12th a couple of years ago, so our timing is pretty good on this. But it's a group based in Washington that pulls together various organizations like the Reeve Paralysis Foundation, the Miami Project. There's also one, Cody Unser, a part of the racing family, the Al Unser family, was paralyzed. Cody was paralyzed in a ski accident. So there's a number of people, but according to them on their website, more than 2 million people live with some form of paralysis. So, you know, you recognize that this is not an isolated thing, that it is impacting not only in Judy's situation, her personally, but rippling out throughout the family and the friends. And, you know, Judy, just on a personal note, it changed your whole social life, didn't it?
Yes, I guess it would. I wasn't quite the same person I was a minute before that. You know, so I mean, I could dance and I could cook and I could run around, and yeah, even though I didn't like cleaning, I could clean. I could do everything. There wasn't much I couldn't do. Ran a medical practice. Mm-hmm. Had a beautiful Sebring. You know, could drive any kind of vehicle I want. Now I drive a modified van, and it's pretty classy, but, you know, I'm definitely limited to what I can drive and what I can do. And, yes, I was dating someone that we were talking about getting married, and we were together for about a year and a half after that. But obviously, my eyes still worked, and I could see that it wasn't quite the same being together. So I certainly made that decision to allow him to go on with his life, and certainly he took advantage of that. And I hope he's very happy now. But we were really happy together, and, you know, when you're not the same person that you fall in love with, things certainly can change. So,
well, they certainly do, and, you know, it's one of the harshest of the realities that some people can cope with it, some people can't, and, you know, and all that. The vehicle issue, you drive now. You're in a power chair, so once somebody can get you in motion, you can take the motion from there. What kind of vehicle is it? Did it require special training for you to do that? I know you
got to do it
on order.
Yeah, I had to go to the Kessler Rehabilitation, and somebody had to. Of course, I wasn't driving. Somebody had to do all that transferring back and forth and with the manual chair to get me out there. So I think it took like over a month, but it was like two times a week for them to get me into a big van. I got a minivan, a Dutch caravan, which is a perfect size. I stay in my power wheelchair. The side door opens. The ramp drops down. I scoot myself right in it. It's got the easy lock, so there's a bolt on the bottom of by my feet that locks into the easy lock. And then because my fingers can't turn a key, it's all electronic. So it took them about 3 months to get all the special equipment, which Division of Vocational Rehab took care of the expense of all the modifications, which were about $45,000 at that time, going back 8 years ago. And then I just pressed the little buttons. Turn up the radio, back it up. Oh, I have to close the ramp first. Close the ramp, turn on the music, back it up, and away I go.
Jason, some parting thoughts, actually. It's interesting when you start to lock in a half an hour's worth of time. You think in the first side of it, what are you going to talk about? Well, we've almost gone through 30 minutes right now, and this is really the first show that I think in a series that we'll do, whether it's this time of the weekend or a different time, we'll work that out. But what would you say to somebody who's going to listen to this ultimately online somewhere down the road? What's your advice for dealing with somebody that's been in an accident and paralyzed? Jason?
Oh, yeah.
Was
for me?
Yeah, the question was to you.
It's so cute.
No problem. What advice would I give? I really think that, number one, accepting the accident, and I know it's, you know, it might take a very long time for someone to really accept the situation that they're in and be able to move forward with their life, but I really think it's taking it a day at a time, realizing that there's things that you're not physically going to be able to do, but there's always, you know, there are always ways, and, you know, with so many people being in an accident, different things that you can do as far as being able to go skiing, be able to go bowling, be able to do the things that when you initially have the accident, you probably think you'll never do again. But, you know, there is a possibility, and there's always hope. So I think it's a matter of, you know, staying positive, having a positive attitude, and having a spirit as remarkable as my mother's, but being able to, you know, take things a day at a time and not get discouraged when you're not able to do something or if things take longer than they used to do. Or, you know, I mean, I just think there's a lot of different factors that are involved with it, and you need to be, you know, somewhat of a mentally strong person. But I really think attitude has a big role in someone, you know, accepting and overcoming death.
I certainly agree with you on that. We do have a surprise caller at the end of the conversation here, an area code 305 caller. You care to identify yourself?
Hi, this is Mary Louise. How you doing, Judy?
Oh, it's so nice to hear from you, too. I'm doing wonderful.
I've been listening to you and just enjoying the whole program, but I couldn't let you go without coming on and just saying that one of the things that I gained out of the whole experience was just a real appreciation for you as a sister-in-law, because you're such an inspiration to your whole family in the way that, you know, you just keep plugging away and you just keep finding the positives in things and you just keep your sense of humor, which is such a gift. So
thank you for saying that.
Yeah, it's been interesting to listen to you, and it was fun to be on here.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for even saying that.
So, yeah. Judy, do you think you want to host a show and do this again?
Do I want to?
Do you want to do this call again? Do you like talking?
Do I like talking? The gift of gab? I think I was born with that. Yeah, if there was things of interest that people would want to hear about, I'd be more than happy to share any of the experiences that I possibly could. That would be fine.
How about email? Do you read email? If we put out an email and somebody what is your email address?
It's easygoing. It's EZGOIN 6707@yahoo.com.
Easygoing 6707@yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's interested in just emailing you a question, you'd be happy to respond.
Oh, sure.
Well, that's excellent. Next week we're going to do this again. We'll set up a time, and maybe this 4:30 on a Sunday works out real well.
Okay.
I think that it's important. I've heard such amazing stories from you and about you that it was great when I found a platform. This Blog Talk Radio allows us to do the conversation we just did. It's being recorded. It'll be available to somebody who might have an interest and a need later on. So we'll do this again next week. You want to close out with anything in particular? Any thoughts?
Judy? Stay happy, stay positive, keep yourself going, and do what you enjoy doing. It doesn't seem to hurt anybody else, but it keeps you smiling.
That's great. Judy Clark.
Hey.
Jason
All
Clark.
Right.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk again later.
Okay.
Goodbye now.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Goodbye now. This is Ken English, and you've been listening to a special edition of Liquid Lounge. Everyone, talk about the water side, but this one was serious, this one was important, and this one was personal. My sister was paralyzed in an auto accident. She gave blood at a hospital in New Jersey about 8 years ago. Coming up this summer, it'll be 8 years. And when she was on her way home, she passed out, rolled the car, woke up in the same hospital as a quadriplegic. It's an accident that happened to her and happens to a lot of people. 10,000 people a year. We'll be talking about life in a wheelchair with Judy Clark next Sunday at 4:30 on Blog Talk Radio. This is Ken English. Thank you for tuning in. And if you do hear this in the future and want to get in touch with Judy, it's EZGOIN 6707@yahoo.com. Have a great day.